Radio Prague News.
President Zeman is meeting with the nominees to two ministerial posts within a pending cabinet reshuffle. Transport Minister Dan Ťok, who is leaving the government, will also vacate his seat in the lower house. And the Czech Republic has the 13th fastest growing economy in the European Union. President Miloš Zeman is meeting with Vladimír Kremlík and Karel Havlíček, who have been nominated to the posts of Transport Minister and Minister of Trade and Industry within a pending government reshuffle on Monday afternoon. They're due to replace Transport Minister Dan Ťok, who is leaving office at his own request following months of severe criticism from the opposition, and Trade Minister Marta Nováková, whose dismissal the Prime Minister announced last week, citing discontent with her performance. The new ministers should be nominated to office at the end of the month. Meanwhile, Transport Minister Dan Ťok, who announced his decision to leave the government last week, said on Monday he would also be vacating his seat in the lower house of parliament. Ťok was elected to the Chamber of Deputies in 2017 as an independent running on the ticket of the ruling ANO party. He has served as transport minister since 2014. Ťok said he was resigning as minister because of the persistent attacks against him. He did not reveal his plans for the future. In 2018, the Czech Republic had the 13th fastest growing economy in the European Union, according to the head of the Czech Statistics Office, Marek Rojíček. With a growth of 2.9%, the Czech economy surpassed that of some of the founding EU members, such as Germany, and was significantly above the EU average. In 2018, Czech economic growth dropped to 2.9% from 4.5% the previous year. The economy was driven by investments in consumer spending, but hampered by lower foreign demand. The fastest growing economies were those of Ireland, Malta, and Poland. Czech companies have started leaving tax havens such as Malta and Liechtenstein, according to statistics published by Bisnode. In the first quarter of this year, the number of Czech firms based in tax havens dropped by 259, which is a bigger drop than in the preceding 3 years put together. The number of Czech firms operating from tax havens is now just over 12,500. According to Bisnode analysts, it is too early to say whether this is a trend or a one-off occurrence. The Czech Republic is becoming less competitive in livestock production and increasingly dependent on imports of livestock and meat and dairy products from abroad, despite the growing amount of state support channeled into this sphere, the Supreme Audit Office said in a report released on Monday. According to the report, Czech livestock producers received close to 21 billion crowns in state funds from 2015 to 2017, 10 billion of which came from European funds. Subsidies to this sphere have been steadily rising since 2012. Despite this, the number of pig breeders and chicken farms has dropped and the country has become more dependent on pork, beef and poultry imports. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday should see clear skies around most of the country, with the day temperatures between 11 and 15 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up in today's program, mothers breastfeed their babies at a Prague branch of Raiffeisen Bank in protest against an incident in which a breastfeeding mum was asked to cover herself or leave. We look at a cut in government funding for NGOs, and later on we meet Trevor Sage, an Englishman whose cleaning of Holocaust memorial plaques in Prague has sparked fresh interest in them. All that coming up, so please stay with us. A group of Czech mothers known as the Breastfeeding Gorillas held a feed-in shortly before lunchtime on Monday at local branches of Austria's Raiffeisen Bank. The protest was called over a specific incident at a Prague branch, but is part of a long-running campaign to change public attitudes, Brian Kennedy reports.
Every mother can well imagine the scene. While waiting your turn with the bank teller, your baby has had her nap but is getting crankier by the minute. She clearly needs to be fed, and now. It's a public place, so you do your best to be discreet. But in the case of a young mum named Lenka, the next thing she knew, a security guard had tapped her on the shoulder and asked her to take it outside. She protested, saying she wasn't some kind of exhibitionist, just feeding her baby. Veronika Nemtsova, one of perhaps a dozen mums who came to this particular branch for the protest, said she felt it was important for women to express their solidarity.
I have experienced it myself personally, and definitely I can sense an unfriendly atmosphere in the society as a whole when it comes to breastfeeding in public.
Lenka herself wasn't on hand, but in her telling of the encounter, recounted in an April 9 posting on the Facebook page of Laktachni Liga, or the Lactation League, the Raiffeisen Bank security guard said he'd be forced to escort her outside if she didn't comply. She left, feeling humiliated, fed her child, and then promptly came back to give the security guard an earful. Breastfeeding Gorillas co-founder Katarzyna Olivova, a co-organizer of Monday's protest, said while this was certainly an extreme case, similar encounters are all too common in Czech society.
Like 5 years before, I have also a terrible experience in some coffee shop, and I need to work with this situation and this energy. So I call some mothers and we go to that coffee shop to breastfeed there together, and it was very refreshing and healing for me. And I also know a lot of mothers have some kind of issues with breastfeeding in public space. So I start working with this topic. I think every time a woman breastfeeds in public space, it's like activism.
There were at least 5 journalists on hand Monday for each of the mothers who took part in the feed-in at the Wenceslas Square branch of the bank, where the incident with the security guard allegedly took place. While the media were not allowed inside, ahead of the appointed hour, Raiffeisen spokesperson Petra Kopecka came outside to explain the bank's position.
We made an apology to our client while we get this information that she wasn't satisfied. And we did everything to prevent these kinds of actions again.
Was there an existing policy about breastfeeding? And if so, has it changed or might there be some new guidelines?
I have to say that on our branches, we usually and always give the mothers opportunity to feed their children in a quiet place and the right way. We never said it's not possible.
Raiffeisen Bank spokeswoman Petra Kopecka ending that report by Brian Kennedy. Moving on now. The Czech Ministry of the Interior has reduced by over one quarter its funding for non-governmental organizations focused on preventing corruption. The money has been diverted into a drink-driving campaign, despite a previous government pledge to allocate more money to anti-graft groups. Ian Willoughby discussed the news with David Ondráčka, head of the Czech branch of watchdog group Transparency International.
It's a farce. Government declares in their strategic documents anti-corruption policy as a top priority. They declare they want to outsource pro bono legal aid to NGOs and support them more. And then, in reality, they do complete opposite. They reduce funding. They basically send a signal to NGOs, you should shut up and keep low. And I believe it's a complete joke, because in reality, the total funding is 2.5 million Czech crowns a year for all NGOs altogether, which is like 120,000 euros, which is really ridiculous amount of money.
And given that the government did previously identify combating corruption as a priority, what's your sense as to why this is happening now?
One of the reasons might be that, for instance, Transparency International investigates high-profile cases of political corruption. We name and shame no matter who. We lead litigations against Prime Minister Babiš, and one might see it as a kind of sweet revenge that is taking place. However, the other explanation might be also that it's a kind of negligence that it's a top policy priority only verbally and politically, but in reality it's not followed with concrete actions.
And in concrete terms, how will this reduction in funding impact the work of Transparency International and other anti-corruption groups?
True is, we don't know yet whether they will reduce funding completely or they will still keep some of it. But any reduction will result in shrinking of our service. It will mean that I will probably need to let go one of my lawyers who work on individual cases. I will not be able to employ one or two analysts who are digging into open sources and openly available documents. And we will not be able to help more citizens who come to our office in dozens every week and who seek our legal advice.
And if we were to accept the idea that the government was deliberately doing this to rein in NGOs that are combating corruption, will that move then prove effective?
Transparency International will survive that, and we will be able to find alternative funding. We will never be quiet, and we will do what we do now and even with more effort. That's what I can promise. However, of course, secure funding for independent anti-corruption NGOs is not an easy task, and we need to give extra efforts to find extra funding and potential donors. So if it happens and they will reduce finally the government funding, I will have to turn to general public and to corporate sector to support our work, because I believe it makes sense.
David Ondráčka, head of the Czech branch of Transparency International, speaking there to Ian Willoughby. And now, this being Monday, we're offering you a summary of the sports news.
We begin today with football, and with only two rounds remaining in the regular season of the Czech top flight, Slavia Prague remained 5 points clear following a 1-1 draw at home with rival Sparta Prague on Sunday. Slavia took the lead in the first half thanks to a header from Tomáš Souček, before the visitors equalised through a wonderful strike from Srdjan Plavšić. However, most attention was focused on a 12-minute foul on Josef Hushbauer by Sparta goalkeeper Florin Nitta, for which Slavia should have been awarded a penalty, but instead saw their player receive a yellow card. Referee Karel Hrubeš later admitted he'd made a mistake in not pointing to the spot kick, saying he'd seen angles afterwards that were not available to him during the in-game VAR review. Hushbauer was distinctly unimpressed when he spoke to reporters.
It was a clear penalty. There's nothing to discuss. I have no idea why he didn't award it. There was clear contact. Otherwise, I would have kept going. It's ridiculous, a comedy. For me, it makes a mockery of football.
The weekend's action in general wasn't the great advertisement for the Czech game or technology. A questionable offside decision, which was also approved after a VAR review, helped second-placed Viktoria Plzeň keep the pressure on Slavia with a 2-1 victory over Baník Ostrava. Komárno Brno won't be able to lift the Czech ice hockey Extraliga title for the third time in succession after being knocked out in the playoff semi-finals. They lost 3-1 to Liberec on Saturday to give their opponents a 4-2 victory in the best-of-seven series. Plzeň pushed the other semi-final to a seventh match with a 3-1 victory over Třinec that left them tied on 3-all on games. That showdown takes place on Monday evening. That's after the recording of our programme. For the first time in 9 years, Tomáš Berdych is not the Czech men's tennis number one. The 33-year-old, who's currently out with a back injury, is now 98th in the world rankings, behind his compatriot Jiří Veselý in 95th. Back in 2010, Berdych had replaced Radek Štěpánek as the top Czech men's player. Finally, the Czech javelin great Barbora Špotáková says she's focusing her energies on reaching Tokyo next year for what would be her fifth appearance at an Olympic Games. Now age 38 and with two children, the double Olympic champion and world record holder told reporters on Saturday that her first appearance of 2019 would be at a Diamond League meeting in Rome in June. That's all the sports news for today.
reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature. Englishman Trevor Sage one day decided to clean Holocaust memorial plaques here in Prague, and in doing so brought fresh interest in them. He is Ian Willoughby's guest now in this edition of One on One.
Around Prague, there are hundreds of stones inlaid in the pavement honouring the victims of the Holocaust. They're known as Stolpersteine, which literally translates as stumbling stones, while Czechs refer to them as the stones of the disappeared. Sometimes grimy and easy to miss, these stones have been receiving fresh attention thanks to Trevor Sage, who decided last year to go around the city and clean them all. Since then, the retired Briton, who's been living here for over a decade, has created interactive maps and built up the Stolpersteine Prague group on Facebook. I spoke to him recently. You yourself have no personal connection to the Holocaust. How did you first become interested in the subject?
When I first came to Prague, I went on a tour of Terezin, and I was given a tour by a survivor, Pavel Stransky, and I found that really moving to get a first-hand account of what it was like to be in such a terrible place. Before I came to Prague, my knowledge really was pretty much what I'd seen on the big screen and the odd documentary, but that really opened up my eyes. And so I really then got an interest into it, and going around the Jewish quarter in Prague, it really is fascinating.
And when did you come across the stones, the Stolperstein, if I'm saying it right?
Yes, Stolperstein. I find it difficult as well. When I was on a tour of Prague with a friend, they were pointed out to me, and it just seemed a shame to me. They're known as the Stones of the Disappeared, and with it getting grimy again, it just looked like they were disappearing for a second time. And I thought it would be lovely to see them shiny and restored again, but being a foreigner, I didn't really think it was my place to do anything about it.
And how did you get the confidence, so to speak, to do something about it?
Well, on Facebook last July, I saw a post that was about a gentleman in Salzburg, Gerhard Gier, and he cleaned all 388 in his city. And I thought, what a wonderful thing to do. And it gave me the inspiration to do the same here.
For people who haven't seen the stones, what exactly are they? What information do they convey?
They are concrete blocks, about 10 by 10 by 10 cubes, and on the top of them is mounted a brass plaque. On that plaque it says here lived, and then the year of birth, and the year and destination of deportation, and finally the fate. And the fate is more often than not murdered, and it's deemed as they were murdered irrespective of their cause of death, because it was due to the Nazi atrocities that they died.
And this began as a German art project.
Yes, it was Günter Demnig in 1992, I think it was. The concept for a Stolperstein came to being, where he laid a 10 by 10 centimetre brass plaque in Cologne, I think it was.
Tell us about when you actually began cleaning them. How did you go about it? Where did you start? That kind of thing.
My first stones were in the Jewish quarter. I set about doing those ones first. Packed up a bag with a towel for kneeling on, a rubber glove, a scourer sponge and some brass polish. And I just started wandering around the Jewish quarter, was my first point of call, and cleaning the stones there.
When you began, how long had they been down? What kind of state were they generally in?
In the Jewish quarter is the first stone that was laid, and that was laid to Max Eckstein in 2008. Generally, in the Jewish quarter, they were not in too bad a condition at all.
And who are the people that are commemorated? Because there are, I believe, like 300 and something of these stones in Prague. Obviously, there were far more people from Prague who were killed during the Holocaust.
Yes, there were many victims. The Stolperstein project is to lay stones for anyone who was persecuted by National Socialism between the years of 1933 and 1945, and that will include not only Jews but also homosexuals, Roma, Sinti, resistance fighters, political prisoners and the disabled, amongst others.
But how are the ones that are honoured now, how have they been chosen among all the victims? Do you know?
Generally I think they're sponsored by relatives now.
Do you ever think about trying to raise money for the other victims whose maybe family isn't around to mark them?
There are a couple where there's a stone for a father, but the mother and daughter, there's no stone. And I have thought about trying to sponsor it even myself or trying to raise some money for it. The problem is that you really need to try and find out whether there are any relatives, because the relatives were the ones to have the final say of whether there should be a stone or not. Some relatives would rather there weren't. It's a great difficulty in trying to track down whether or not there are relatives.
Why would people not want to have a stone commemorating their deceased relative?
In Munich, they feel that it's disrespectful to have the stone set in the pavement. They would much rather have plaques in the walls.
When you began doing it, how did people respond to what you were doing?
Well, first of all, I didn't get much response from anyone until after I'd cleaned about 70 of them. A lady named Jitka Hatebonovo stopped and started talking to me and asking me about the project. She asked whether she could take my photograph and whether she could publish it on Facebook. I didn't have a problem with that at all, so I said yes. She posted it on Facebook, and then very quickly it amassed more than 1,000 likes and 800 shares. And there was so much interest shown in the project, I decided that for everyone to keep tabs on what I was doing and to let everyone know, I'd start a Facebook page, Stoppersteiner Prague. And to date, I have about 1,800 followers.
So now, do people recognise you? Do people stop you when you're doing it or speak to you?
Many people have said, you're the Englishman who's cleaning the stones, aren't you? So there is some notoriety there.
Do any of the stones in particular stand out to you in terms of the story of the person being honoured?
Yes, there's several. I mean, the most touching ones are when they're very young. The youngest one is 2 years, 11 months. And I feel very emotional when I see that, because I can't help but wonder what may become of their lives. They may have had gone on to have families, and we don't know any history of those individuals, but there are other individuals like Peter Ginz. He was 14 when he was deported without his parents as well to Terezin. By the time he was 14, he'd actually written 5 novels. He'd done an Esperanto dictionary.
And I guess he's one of the more famous victims.
Yes, he is. He done more than 150 drawings. He's quite an accomplished drawer and painter as well. In Terezin, he actually founded an underground paper, a magazine, Vadem, We Lead. And there was as many as 800 copies made over 2 years.
I presume there's a very broad age range among the victims, or the people who are honoured by the stones.
Yes, yes, again from 2 years, 11 months, and the eldest is 83.
How often do you get out and clean the stones, or how many of them have you cleaned so far?
Oh, I cleaned all 311. At the time it was 285, but since in August there was another 24 that were installed. There are still 6 missing. They've been mislaid, I believe. Every month I will produce a list, post it on Facebook of all the birthdays in that month, and I do try and get around to a few of them, not necessarily all of them, but I get around to polish them then and lay a flower or light a candle just in memory of the victims.
Tell us more about the online component of what you do. You've created a map of the stones and relating to the victims.
Yes, there's 2 versions, both MapOptic and Google Maps. And in both of them, there are all the locations around Prague that are plotted on the maps. If you click on each location, it'll show you the stone and also, where possible, a photograph of the individual. Of the 311, we actually know the faces to 195 people.
Do you have any sense that people have more respect for the stones than they would have before you began cleaning them?
There's a number of people that have said to me that they weren't even aware of the stones before, so even just talking about them has raised their profile and people are more aware. Recently I asked for volunteers to help me clean the stones for Yom HaShoah on the 2nd of May, and the response was overwhelming. I had 50 people come forward to clean the stones, and between those 50 plus people we've covered all 148 locations for the stones.
Since you took an interest here, the number has grown. What are the plans for the future, do you know, as regards these stones in Prague?
In Prague in September, it's hoped that there'll be another 40 installed, and there are plans now for a further 40 in 2020.
When you're on the street, on your knees, cleaning these stones, what goes through your mind?
Well, I can't help wondering what it was like for the individuals, you know, what lives they must have had and how it was for them when they were actually deported and forced to leave those apartments. The stones are laid at the last chosen place of residence for the individuals, so, you know, it really was their home that I'm kneeling at. And I can't help but wonder what it was like for them. And it must have been under terrible circumstances to leave everything behind. And often they're told you can just take luggage with you of 50 kilograms, I think it was, and hand over your keys to your apartment. And then they were deported.
And for you, what's the value of what you do?
There's a great deal of satisfaction for myself raising the profile of the Stones and the victims, and making them, you know, people are talking about them, and through talking about them, we will remember the atrocities, and hopefully everyone will keep them in our mind, we will remember them, and we won't repeat the same mistakes again.
Trevor Sage was Ian Willoughby's guest on this edition of One on One, and I'm afraid it's brought us to the end of today's programme from Prague. You'll find us at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then please write to english@radio.cz. And of course, remember you can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter. This is Daniela Zerová saying thanks for listening and take care.